Anyway, so let's come on more to the positive alternative. So, come back to the middle way. Now, I'm going to suggest that the bottom line for ethics is how well we address conditions. So how well we address conditions, as we've been saying, is to do with how well we avoid delusion and how objective we are and how integrated we are, both as individuals and as societies. So the more we do those things, the better we address conditions, the more ethical we'll be. That's the point. Now, I've been asked before, you know, how do I justify that? Now, it seems like a claim. Addressing conditions is what's good. And I agree that that needs to be justified in relation to experience. And I think addressing conditions is something we experience all the time, the demands of addressing conditions in one way or another. There is a detailed argument in Middle Way Philosophy 1 in a chapter headed Normativity, which tries to address this more fully. I'll just mention this briefly at the moment, but so the argument that I give there is that there are various ways in which we experience oughtness, normativity, what's rightness in our experience, but all of them actually imply addressing conditions. So, for example, we experience that we ought to fulfil desires, or we ought to fulfil certain desires. But we do that better if those desires were integrated. So it's the basis of my argument there. So, why should one desire be good on its own when we may actually have other desires going on that we're not recognising at the same time, or that other people may have at the same time that we're not taking into account? So if one desire is good, then surely fulfilment of more desires is even better. Similarly, people feel, using the sort of Kantian approach, that being rational and acting according to consistent principles is good. But then, surely if that's the case, we should attempt to take that consistency beyond a particular cognitive model, which means that actually we shouldn't be limited by the particular way in which we're expressing our principles at one given moment. That we should try and take into account our ignorance, in other words, or the limitations of the cognitive model we're using to express our principles.
So you're saying that we, the moral thing to do is to address conditions, and how you evaluate how well you've addressed conditions is the extent to which that integrates desires.
Well, I would be saying that. That's not exactly what I was saying just then.
Right.
I'm trying to address the question, why ought we to address conditions? And what's so great about that? You know, you can always ask that question about any claimed ought. You know, but I'm suggesting the various things that we may feel we ought to do, and typically that involves some sort of desire or some sort of rational principle, or the third alternative is some sort of social convention that we feel we ought. You know, this is probably the biggest one, in fact, that we feel we ought to fit in with what everyone else is doing. But any of those, when you start investigating the conditions that they actually involve, I'd suggest the sort of direction they're taking us in will be better fulfilled if they actually address the whole of conditions. So if they go beyond the limitations of the particular model used in each case. So hence, you know, if it's good to fulfil one desire, then why not integrated desires? You know, wouldn't that do it better? If it's good to obey one principle, why not go beyond that cognitive model to an even better consistency? And if we're obeying, if we think it's good to follow the conventions of our society, surely it's even better to integrate societies and make those conventions bigger, as it were, so that they're not in conflict with each other.
Do you see addressing conditions also like doing what's best for the whole situation?
Yes. Yeah. But moving incrementally outwards from whatever we are concerned with or encounter in our own experience to start with. Yeah. So it may be any of those things, but there's always a moral challenge beyond them that we can do a bit better.
Yeah. Is it important or of value to make a distinction between compromise and integration? So you're finding an optimal solution to a moral question that addresses as many different possible conditions and principles as you can. And you wind up with some kind of compromise? Or what's the difference between a compromise or integration? Is there one? Does it matter?
An integration is not necessarily a compromise.
Right.
I think we did talk about this a couple of days ago.
I'm going back over stuff, but it takes me a while.
Sure.
In my head.
Well, because one side of a conflict may just address conditions way better than the other, so the tilt is much more towards the side that does address conditions better. Mm. So, like giving up smoking versus having another fag. Giving up smoking addresses the conditions way, way better than having another fag.
Mm. Yeah.
So, in effect, there to integrate it, you've got to get the energy that wants another fag and get that energy to support giving up smoking.
Mm. Wasn't that something you were struggling with? These two opposing energy.
If you say it like that, that sounds fine. Just using the energy. It was just fitting it into the mule model, where they work together and they both get their goals.
Mm.
Because with that, the wanting to have another fag doesn't achieve its goal. It's just redirected.
Yeah, you do have to think of the energy separately from the particular way that that desire is being conceptualised at that moment.
Mm.
Because the way it's being conceptualised is just how the ego happens to be at that moment.
With the cigarettes, it is a compromise, isn't it? Because the side that wants to smoke is compromising.
Well, if that's how you define a compromise, but normally I understand a compromise as being both sides coming together into some third position, which is neither of the ones you started with.
Yeah, so it's not a compromise, but one side isn't getting at all what it wants at all in any way.
As it's conceived at the moment of the initial moment of the conflict, yes.
Mm.
But the point there is that the desire to have a fag becomes attached to progressively, gradually changed beliefs of understanding of conditions gradually shifts, which might in practice involve gradually cutting down, or it might involve focusing that energy on some other activity, or there's obviously a variety of ways of giving up smoking, but those practical ways, I think in practice, harness some kind of method of bringing that energy to bear, so that both the mules are working together effectively. Yeah. I mean, so a lot of this is already out there, as Barry would say, as part of various therapies and so on. I'm just trying to pull it all together. I was talking about the bottom line for ethics, wasn't I? So that's my case anyway. That addressing conditions is where it's at. It's not obeying God. It's not just doing what you feel like. It's addressing conditions. That's good. And delusion of one kind or another prevents us from facing up to conditions. So the kinds of delusions we've been talking about, created by the ego and having a cognitive model and believing that that's the end of the story, is basis of delusion. So the question then is, do we have the confidence and do we have the balanced judgment to overcome that delusion? So that's going to be crucial for the ethical process, to not only balance our judgments, but to have enough confidence in those balanced judgments to act on them, and to maybe assert them against adverse conditions of one kind or another. So ethics I don't see as distinct from objectivity, nor is it distinct from integration or the middle way. They're really all different ways of talking about the same thing, different angles. Basically, these concepts all become useful in application, or they become universal in application. What I mean by ethics being universal isn't that you've got one sort of universal, or even a set of universal principles which are always true. What I mean is there are certain sorts of methods which one can apply which have a certain consistency to them. But it's the method that's consistent rather than the content of any description of how we act or should act. And of course that the universality even of the method is theoretical. You know, it could be superseded in future, as I was saying yesterday.
For me, that's a really great model. So if you address a moral situation and you reflect back at it at a later date and it wasn't that particularly effective, it wasn't the method that was a problem, it was your application of that method with the tools you had, your psychological state or the conditions at the time all in flux there.
But I mean the method itself, as we'll see, has quite a lot of flexibility, and there's different ways you can try and apply the method. and different judgments you can make about how to apply it.
Because in a way you could say that Kant's categorical imperative was a method, as opposed to determining what the content of...
Unfortunately, the method, though, it entailed determining what the content of absolutely right principles was. It's the way the method works that's the problem there. And this also, another important aspect of this is that it involves recognising uncertainty. So acting in a way that takes into account uncertainty is the basis of the universality, as far as I'm concerned. It's not, claiming to have certainty is a traditional way of trying to be universal, and I think it has the opposite effect. It tends to actually create conflict. Individual conditions vary hugely, and moral objectivity depends on how we respond to those specific individual conditions that we meet. Moral objectivity for a peasant woman in Bolivia is going to be very different from my experience. I'm not at all suggesting that the same moral rules or even principles are likely to apply in the two cases, but there will be some sort of similarity in the methods that we might each use to determine what's morally objective.